welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. For those of you who have been listening into the live stream just previously, you might have heard a few cuss words. Let's hope you're over 18 and can deal with it like adults. And my very special guest is the wonderful, fantastic, and various other nice adjectives, man, Michael Tellinger from slavespecies.com. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny. Nice to be talking to you again.
Yeah, it's one of those days. It's one of those days.
Yeah, tell me about it. I've been having Skype problems all day long. My friends in Germany suggested that they're messing with it. Somebody is messing with it, but so far, so good.
I love that. It's quite funny being a conspiracy theorist because what did I do? I sent a message to a potential guest today, except I sent it to the wrong Skype person, and so I removed the message from that from the wrong Skype person, and then they're like, "Oh my God, video, something happening to you." It's funny, man. When you got your head buried in conspiracy, you see a conspiracy everywhere. You know, it's just like, dude, I wasn't meant to send you that message, bro. Yeah, it's classic. You know, your mind always goes to dark places, and everybody wonders why I choose to laugh all the time. You know.
Well, I've just been having this discussion about, you know, delving on the dark and the negative with a friend of mine yesterday, and having returned from our 10 week epic tour of the USA and also Germany. It was just absolutely amazing. To come back and be filled with such positive feedback and meeting with incredible people, like-minded people all over the United States and also in Germany, where I spoke to 1,000 people in a town called Heidenheim. And it's just amazing to see the global awakening and the pace at which it's happening. It's absolutely spectacular. And then walking into somebody that is delving into the past and still harping on the negative without seeing the bright light at the end of the tunnel, which is something we need to overcome. So that's something I'd like to talk to you about today.
Proceed.
Well, just really, you know, we've got to stop. We all know what the problems are. If for those people that don't know what the problems are, there's enough literature out there, enough books, magazines, websites. My goodness, you'll never ever reach an end. You can read about the conspiracies and the harsh doings and the wrongdoings for the rest of your life and die reading that kind of stuff. But what we need to start doing rapidly and with light and song in our hearts is talk about the bright and wonderful future that we have ahead of us if we just start projecting that reality for ourselves.
Is there like a bridge here, though? Because I've just always been thinking about this, and I've had arguments with people about it, about how far does positive thinking go before actually taking positive action has to take effect before anything happens?
Yeah. Well, the important thing is that you've got to have the thought. You've got to have the intent and the thought. And if you start doing things towards it, it strengthens the whole energy field, and you'll start seeing signs and messages and things happening in your life that cannot be explained in any other way other than you are now projecting your own reality. And it's amazing how I've started to recognize that, especially with my partner Louise. She's very, very strong into this way of thinking, and she's a real energy worker. And it's just amazing how we've started manifesting things that we, for example, talk about something tonight, and tomorrow morning we wake up and bang, it's landed on our doorstep, or it's people arrive at the Ubuntu Village center that we have here in our little one-horse town in South Africa. And and it just happens more and more frequently. The more you immerse yourself in that kind of thinking and just projecting your positive vision and outcome on where we should be moving and where you would like to move in the greater scheme of things as a living, breathing human being with infinite soul, and how you activate yourself with that positive thinking, and I use the word positive thinking. Sorry, I'm a little tired. It's midnight here. I've been at it all day. I've been editing my new book, so my brain is a little frozen at this stage of the day. So.
Maybe I could take over for you just a little bit.
Jeez.
Yeah. Poor man. Yeah. It's going to be like 2 a.m. by the time this show finishes for you as well.
Yeah, but yeah, this is what we do because we love doing it, right?
If you say so.
there's always some aspects
that you don't overly enjoy, and you wish you had somebody to do them for you. But you know, hey, at the end of the day, yourself is all you have to rely on, and it's kind of like it's not a choice; it's a lack of options. I like to say.
Well, what's also critical here for me and many people that might be listening to it, that I'm sure that many will resonate with it, is. It's the choices we make and the life we choose, and I'm just extremely happy and I guess I feel deeply blessed that I seem to have found what I chose to come and do in this lifetime, and I really wish this on everyone to go out there and do not be fearful of what the consequences are of you deciding of, you know, following your path and your passion in life, because that is what we should be doing. We are ultimately creative souls. We are born into a creation. We are, you know, infinite creative souls that are fractals of the infinite divine. And that's our main purpose in this creation is to create. And this is what I'm beginning to realize very, very strongly as I work on my whole, you know, philosophy of Ubuntu contributionism, a world without money, where people contribute their God-given talents and their acquired skills that they're passionate about towards the greater benefit of all the people in their community. And I just like to really wish it and suggest from my personal experience is, follow your heart, follow your dreams, follow your passions, and as long as you're doing it for not your own egotistic reasons, but for reasons of sharing the joys of what you're doing with those around you in the community, the rewards are insanely beyond our wildest belief.
Well, I think there might be some truth to that, because ultimately, if you're not believing in yourself, obviously you'll never get any rewards. And if you let fear govern you to stop you from doing all these things that you want to do, life's not really going to be worth living, is it? Like this dude approached me after a protest, Michael, and he plays bass or whatever, and I told him that, you know, I sang and so on. I was saying, well, let's get together and have a bit of a jam, you know, a bit of a jam would be good. And I see him randomly a couple of weeks later. He never bothered to contact me, and he tells me that one of his flatmates or some other person says to him, oh, you want to go hang out with him? Oh, my goodness, he'll be on the terror watch list or whatever. So he decided not to contact me, governed completely by frickin' fear.
Yeah. But, it's understandable that those who are not involved in this area of work or research or information are, unfortunately, victims of the fear-mongering propaganda tactics that are very effectively imposed on humanity. And it's spectacular. I've just actually been, you know, I just finished editing my new book today. So I hope that it'll go to layout in the next day or two. But I was dealing with that chapter earlier today, and I was just looking for some additional quotes about manipulating people through fear and how you can control people, and I found this quote by Hermann Goering, you know, one of Hitler's right-hand men who it sounds like something that was concocted by the American government for all the false flag events that they, you know, unleashing on planet Earth at the moment. And this is what Hermann Goering said. I think it was in 1945 during the Nuremberg trials. He said, naturally, the common people don't want war, neither in Russia nor in England, nor for that matter in Germany. That is understood. But after all, it is the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it is always a simple matter of drag the people along, whether it is a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the peacemakers for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in any country. Hermann Goering. And boy, is that being implemented effectively, especially in the United States, where, you know, you're not a, you're anti-American, you're unpatriotic if you don't support all the activities against the terrorists. And
well, I think they've forgotten the founding fathers, particularly Thomas Paine, where a patriot's duty is to protect his country from his own government.
Yeah, they very conveniently forget to remind the people of that. But at the same time, as I said earlier in our discussion, how absolutely gratifying it is to have just come back from the States and being at, you know, places like Contact in the Desert and Joshua Tree with some of the world's leaders in research and conspiracy and ufology and whatever it is you want to talk about, banksters and so forth, seeing how the American people are waking up to this so quickly, and they no longer just, you know, sheep that will follow anything the leaders say. And I think the indication of that is in the recent Congress votes to start a war again or invade Syria, and the vote went against Obama, and that was not expected, I guess.
The American people just went, you can't be serious, we're not Goering.
Yeah. Well, good one. I think if that was 10 years ago, it would have been heavily swung in favor of, yeah, let's go get them bastards. You know, look what they're doing to their own people. That's terrible. We got to set them straight. We'll teach them how to live in democracy and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And
it's a great one, considering the, you know, what the government does to its own people. There's a woman in the Senate right now who says that if you get caught texting while driving, I don't want any fines. I want a mandatory prison sentence of 5 days for texting while driving and 6 months for the second offense.
Wow.
This is freaking insane.
It's just, yeah.
They've got to keep those private prison quotas going, don't they?
Yeah, it's incredible. And then the same thing happened in the, was it the House of Lords or whatever the house in England is that also voted and also voted against the invasion of Syria. So what my take out is that in the last few years, the consciousness among the politicians in the USA and in the UK has risen dramatically. And the other thing is that what people need to remember is, you know, we can go off bashing the politicians and so forth, and that's not always the right thing to do, because not all politicians are bad and evil and have ill intent. I think many of them, if not most of them, probably go into politics in the beginning believing that they can make a difference. They go into it with good hearts and intentions, and then as they get into
simply
it, they
the
get
the good apple jumping into the bad barrel.
Yeah, and they just become, they get turned, and then at some stage they realize that they're part of this rotten, you know, gangster club, and sooner or later they say, hold on, I can change my mind. I can vote against this atrocity and these atrocities. And I think that's happening. I think.
I think so too. My favourite speech before leaving Parliament was by a New Zealand politician called Nando Tanchos, who never owned a wristwatch before coming to Parliament, and all of a sudden he had to be at all these meetings at all these times all the frickin' time. So he pulls out a ball peen hammer out of his inside jacket pocket and he smashes it into bits on the desk and says, "I'm out." We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastmanshow.com.
Alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide conspiratorial gangster computer god communism with wall-to-wall deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly sneak parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick, trap, rob, wreck, butcher, and murder the people to keep them terrorized in gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery for the communist gangster government and con artist parroting puppet gangster playboy scum on top. There is no escape from this worse gangster police state using all of the deadly gangster Frankenstein controls.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We've been having some technical issues in the background there. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate your patience on this particular day of stresses. My very special guest is Michael Tellinger. The website is slavespecies.com. And, you know, when you become aware of who sort of runs the show around here on this planet, Michael, you kind of think to yourself, you know what, our entire species is enslaved. Slavespecies.com.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I called my book Slave Species of God originally. And I just want to also make a small correction. We've changed the my main website is now called michaeltellinger.com. And slavespecies.com actually falls under that, and the information on the book is there. It's just a lot easier for people to remember Michael Tellinger than Slave Species at times. But nevertheless, whichever way you get there, as long as you start thinking about it, and by all means, go and get the book and read it. It'll make you think. If you haven't read information or literature in that area, which I guess most of your listeners probably have already, in any case, but I'm just amazed at how after all these years, it's been nearly 8 years since I released that book, and how people are finding it today and still, you know, emailing me from all over the world and just raving at how it's changing their life and their outlook on life. So clearly I must have done something right there. So I'm really, really happy with that.
Well, I think it is something that we all crave as human beings. It's a very human thing to crave recognition for the things that you do, especially if what you do you feel is very important.
Well, that's exactly why I say and claim that the philosophy of Ubuntu contributionism is such a simple system for everybody to fall into. Because it's based on recognizing people in your community for what it is that they do and giving them the respect that they deserve for what it is that they contribute to their community, whether they're rocket scientists, engineers, shoemakers, glassblowers, farmers, teachers, whatever. Because in a moneyless society, and I guess we need to talk about that because I've just sort of jumped into the deep end here, in a moneyless society that the whole system of contributionism is based on, the things that people do is what gives them joy and pleasure. And it is those things that give them joy and pleasure because they're good at it. And therefore, those around them in their community respect them for it. And there's no better reward than the respect and gratitude from those around you in your community.
That's absolutely true. Have you noticed how a lot of people get sort of, I don't know, detached and despondent from their families themselves in situations like this. You know, you go off, you start doing your own thing, you start exposing scumbaggery, and all of a sudden you think that your family starts to hate you. Because you're not living the dream, you know. You're not going and getting your slave job. You're not getting a slave missus. You're not having several slave kids, having a slave marriage, and just living your happy slave life. You know, they get really upset with you.
Absolutely, and again, remember, this has been going on for thousands of years. This is what I outlined very clearly in my new book, which I believe is probably going to be the sort of the next epic after Slave Species, which clearly outlines that this is not something that happened in the last few decades or the last few hundred years. Something that's been orchestrated and planned and executed meticulously for thousands of years. The legal system we have, the convoluted and deeply disturbing legal system that we have, and the laws that have been written, the volumes and volumes and thousands of legal volumes that are there, not for human benefit, but for protecting the corporate interests of the corporatization of our planet at the detriment of human beings. That's been going on for thousands of years. And all it takes is, once you start getting involved in the legal system against the banks and standing up for your own rights, as you know I've done here in South Africa, and you start going to the high courts and the Supreme Courts, and you stand there and you see how completely biased and one-sided the judges are and the legal system is, and how convoluted and complex it is, you realize that this is something that's been going on for a long, long time.
What is that something? And is it human or inhuman in nature, to your belief?
Well, it's the intentional enslavement of the human race, and the intentional enslavement of humanity on various levels. My latest presentations, I refer to our four levels of enslavement, and that is the physical enslavement, because there's absolute scientific and genetic evidence that we're cloned species, and therefore my book, Slave Species of God, and God being with a small g, as opposed to God with a big G, right? And think about that for a while. So we enslaved physically as a cloned species, waking up from our slave species mentality, now suddenly realizing, oh my God, things are not the way we thought they were. We enslaved emotionally, because now we're confused about it, and it really hurts, and it's a confusing situation, emotional situation for us. We enslaved mentally. We're trying to analyze it and compute it cognitively and logically, but it doesn't make any sense. So that's even more confusing. And finally, and most importantly, we enslaved spiritually on two levels. Spiritually, through the lies and deception of mainstream religions that were created to just propagate the enslavement of our species and us on this planet. But even more importantly, the enslavement spiritually on our soul level, where our souls are actually trapped in this reality through this weird thing called karma and the karmic trap. And that's a huge thing for many people to overcome and to figure out and come to terms with, because many people, especially those that have been studying Eastern philosophy, are under the misconception that karma is a natural order of things, and it is not a natural order of things the way that we experience karma on this planet and in this reality. Karma is only a natural order of things if it is a voluntary karma, where your soul chooses to reincarnate in another body or another being or another entity or a plant or an animal or a rock or whatever the hell your soul chooses to reincarnate into, to experience whatever it wants to experience. That's by choice. But if you are hurled back against your will into another life thousands of times, not realizing or recognizing or remembering your past lives, not having a building up of experiences and knowledge and information through these experiences, that is what is called a karmic trap. So you repeat the stuff over and over again until something happens. And it is that something that I've now reached a stage of understanding it in my own way, and I call this now the moment of enlightenment. And that is when you recognize and realize that this karmic trap is the thing that keeps us in this cycle of enslavement on our soul and spiritual level. And only when you realize this do you reach what I now refer to as a state of enlightenment, and then can you do something about it. Until then, you're going to keep coming back and being confused about why you're here and what the hell you're doing and why is this life so miserable and why am I caught up in this and that and blah, blah, blah. And only when you realize that that you don't have to come back and be part of this karmic trap, that you've reached enlightenment and you can step out of that never-ending cycle, karmic trap cycle. And that's a hugely important moment. It was a big aha moment for me when that penny dropped for me, and I hope it makes sense to some of your listeners.
I've got this different perspective of karma, is that some people say, oh, well, you know, if you're a good person, good thing will happen to you. If you're a bad person, bad things will happen to you. I'm of the direct opposite opinion. I believe that if you do a lot of bad things and cover your tracks real well, heaps of good things happen for you. If you're a real good person and you trust a whole lot of people or whatever, obviously some of those people will be bad, and they'll do heaps of really bad things to you. It's kind of like a discernment and personal responsibility ahead of belief for me. But at the same time, you kind of feel like I do a lot of good things for people, Michael, but I don't think that I could ever really pay back, if I tried, all the people that have done good things for me, right?
Yeah.
And but I think that's because I've got a radio show, you know, I've got like an audience actually people listening at the same time. If I was doing the same thing, going around and helping people day in, day out, everywhere, but nobody was listening or nobody was hearing it, I wouldn't receive anywhere near the amount of support that I'm getting now from, say, listeners. And I was just thinking about this yesterday. If I actually tried to pay back in some way all of the people that had donated or contributed or subscribed or whatever to this radio show, it'd be next to impossible, because I'm absorbing, you know, kind of good energy in the form of money in a lot of ways from lots of really good people all around the world, and it's almost like I feel guilty.
Yeah, and we shouldn't feel guilty about these things, because it's all going to change. But I hear what you say, but I've got to just clarify as to what I mean by this karma and the karmic trap, because this is a big thing, and I really hope this sinks in with some of your listeners, because it's a huge realization. This it took me a lifetime to get to this point, and I hope many people get there a lot sooner. And maybe if I'm not explaining it correctly, I'll hopefully do it at another time when I'm less tired, and or in my next book. But I do so in my presentations. I go into it in great detail. There is an energy grid around the planet. Whether it's still active or not, I don't know. I suspect it's no longer active. And that energy grid seems to have been put there by the
unknown. What seems to be bumping there?
Oh, sorry, that was me playing with my fingers on the table.
It's the energy grid. Boom, 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 boom.
You've got good ears. You've got very good ears across all the way from here to New Zealand, right? What is that, about 12,000 kilometers or whatever it is?
Yeah, my hearing's sharpish.
So this energy grid seems to have been put around planet Earth by the Anunnaki. They might have it might have been supported in later times by other beings, other entities, but I believe that the first beings that actually put this energy grid around planet Earth were the Anunnaki, and there are some very interesting Sumerian texts that refer to this and suggest that they're the ones that created this energy grid as a karmic trap for the souls. So when your soul leaves your body, when you die and your soul leaves your body, and it wants to go on another little adventure or a journey, or as we in South Africa call a jol. If your soul goes on this jol and wants to have all these experiences, before it knows, it gets fried by this this energy grid around our planet. Ashiana Dean actually refers to it in her amazing work. She refers to it as the blank slate technology, or the BST, where a soul gets fired and forgets where it comes from, and then comes back to Earth, you know, enters, reincarnates, and has no idea why it's done so, and what its purpose is, and so forth. And that's just spectacular. The karmic trap thing is an interesting thing, because the Anunnaki are far more active and have a far longer and sinister and devious history in ancient past, but that seems to have been overturned now by their own rise of consciousness, especially the elders among the Anunnaki, and I'm now referring to the sort of supreme beings amongst them called Enki and Enlil. And they seem to have shifted across in their own consciousness and are actively involved in the emancipation and the rise of consciousness among humanity, and breaking down some of those things and the constructs that they created for the original enslavement of the species, or as the Sumerian tablets, or as the Anunnaki call it in the Sumerian tablets, the Lulu Amelu, or the primitive worker. This is just interesting stuff for those that are of this kind of frame of mind at this stage.
I do think so. Look, Sumerians turn up out of the blue kind of thing. All of a sudden they got really advanced lore, mathematics, systems, and everything in place all of a sudden. And where did they get all that knowledge? Where did they get all that ability to run a civilization, like all of a sudden? Oh, wow, have a look at all these tablets and all these aliens and so on and so forth that are all over them and talking about the gods that came from the sky and so on and so forth. Oh, but we won't talk about that, will we? Because, hey, everybody was just created in a single day. We'll be right back after the break at thevinegarshow.com.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew
Welcome
up,
back.
I could be anything I wanted. Fireman, a policeman, a doctor.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is the illustrious and magnanimous and somewhat fabulous Michael Tellinger from MichaelTellinger.com is the website there. He's also the writer of the book Slave Species, I believe, which talks about humanity basically being a bunch of test tube slaves created by the Anunnaki to basically, you know, be they create us in their image so that we can basically do their bidding. That's kind of the gist of the story there. It'd be really nice to bring that feed down at some point. We're having a lot of technical issues today, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very, very sorry about that. It's not my fault. In fact, none of it's my fault. I'm doing the best that I can here. Come on, give me a break, Gary. Give me a break. Is this feed music ever going to come down? Ever? Like, waiting for it? No? Okay. Let's just sit here and wait for like 5-10 minutes while the board op gets his business together and actually brings that feed down, eh? Waiting for it? Waiting for it? Still waiting for it? You got to be freaking kidding me. What the heck is going on here? I'm going to go insane. Yep. Yeah. And finally, we're back. Yeah. It does kind of.
You willed it into submission. You did that, you know. You willed it into submission.
No, I just knew that it was going to run out of steam sooner or later before I did, because I've got coffee and it doesn't.
Yeah.
But you'll probably run out of steam before I do, mate. What's it now? It's now nearly 1 o'clock in the morning, local time. You poor dear. You're like a full 12-hour difference.
Yeah, yeah. That's fun. It's always fun doing these chats, having Skype chats with people that are 12 hours away. It causes serious problems. I know when I talk to my friends in Hawaii, they're exactly 12 hours, right on the opposite side of the planet. If you put a line through the Earth, it'll come out from South Africa to Hawaii. It's quite interesting. And when I talk to my friend William Brown in Hawaii, who now works with Nassim Haramein at the Resonance Project Research Institute, it's always a struggle to try and find the right time. It's either late in the evening or early in the morning for either one of us.
It's nasty, eh? And that's kind of like a real frustrating thing, because I was trying to organize, I think, you know, John Perkins, the economic hitman?
Yeah.
His organizer, Pam there, she wanted me to call her, sort of thing, but it's like the opposite sides of the earth. And like, by the time I'm finished my show and everything, I'm just so freaking knackered. And then, everybody else in the States is like verge off to bed. And a lot of times, and it's just like,
yeah,
you know, it's almost like you kind of have to choose to lose sleep in order to have the conversations with the people on the other side of the world. Like, our technology hasn't gotten that advanced yet.
Yeah. Well, this is, as I said, we choose to do this, and we have to, you know, pay the price. And the emphasis on pay, which we need to talk about, right? And price, and why things have a price on them, and why we all have to pay from the moment we are born on a planet that we are born on free. When we are born, we have not agreed to anything other than just being born. And before we know, all these things are imposed on us, all these rules, regulations, and if we don't abide by them, we get into trouble and we get locked up. How is that possible? We didn't agree to any of that when we were born. So what's going on?
I think actually our parents did, because there's a birth certificate thingy. And that's why they call it being birthed, just like a ship in the harbor. And they got nice little stock market wacky do's thing going on there. Apparently there's some kind of a shipping number on your birth certificate, and you can look it up on the New York Stock Exchange because they own all of us.
Yeah. And so that's why I brought it up. So, you know, your parents chose to give you away, but you didn't choose. You didn't agree to that. So it's a one-sided contract. So you should be able to cancel that at any stage and say, sorry, I'm not interested in that.
Well, funny you should mention that, because that was the guest yesterday. Kerry Campbell from New Zealand. She cancelled her contract with the slave masters and made a withdrawal of $15 million.
Oh, I'd like to know more about that, because
they arrested her, tried to dislocate her arm with three men hanging off of one of it, and then that didn't work, so they tried to break her wrist, and then that didn't work, so they tried to break her fingers, and then that didn't work, so they left her alone. They actually closed down the police station and kidnapped her from court. Like she goes to court to defend herself, you know, and the police kidnap her from court and then close down the police station so nobody's allowed in or out, and they hold their own private court in the police station and then start moving her around the whole country for a couple of days' time. No message to her parents or anything like that. She got eight kids, and she had no idea what was going on. These people, if you try to free yourself, you know, don't operate under any illusions that being free means free from trauma and scumbaggery attacks.
That's really interesting information. I would like to get more information on that, Vinny, if you can.
I'll send you the link to the interview. We did it yesterday.
That'll be awesome. I need to share that with the people here in South Africa, because, you know, you're aware of the fact that the Ubuntu Party, the Ubuntu movement, is actually a political party in South Africa. And we're going to be running in the elections next year. So I'm going to be running for president, believe it or not.
No kidding. You take over from Mandela's mantle.
Our friend Jacob Zuma, who's just built himself a 200 million rand home.
I was going to say that. I've actually talked to a lot of South Africans, and I say that South Africa was a lot less corrupt when it was under a completely racist apartheid regime.
Oh, that is probably true. Very interesting information. This is in my new book. I deal with this stuff. It's a very sensitive subject, you know, just like when you start talking about the Holocaust and about some of these things that have been made sacrosanct. You can't talk about it. This is how it is. If you talk about it, you go to jail. Or if you deny it, you go to jail and stuff like that. And the whole thing of apartheid in South Africa has become a bit of that, you know. But at the same time, what has become clear to me now is that the sort of the architect of apartheid, Hendrik Verwoerd, who was the prime minister in South Africa, who introduced apartheid, and he actually was assassinated in 1966. And he wasn't assassinated because of apartheid. He was assassinated because he either did or was about to stop the South African Reserve Bank from printing the money, just like JFK and Lincoln. And guess what happened to those two? And the same thing happened to Hendrik Verwoerd. At the time that this happened, the South Africa was reported to be the most prosperous country in the world, with exports of everything imaginable, and no debt, and a very high standard of life. Apartheid was being practiced, but there was virtually no unemployment. And these are sensitive subjects to talk about. But Hendrik Verwoerd was assassinated not because of his stance on separate development that later became known as apartheid, the Afrikaans word for separate development. And they used his philosophy of apartheid to hide the whole thing. But he was killed by the banksters, and because of what he did or was planning to do. And the South African Reserve Bank continued to print the money, which is obviously owned by the Rothschilds. So you will see the same thing repeats itself all over the world.
Well, it would occur to me that if the same patterns are repeating themselves all over the world, then the same powers must be in control of the entire planet.
Absolutely. And so follow the money and you'll see who the powers are. What's interesting, though, is that the bankers that we know, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers and so forth, those are the obvious names, but there's a higher power behind them that created this whole thing, that gave them the knowledge and the information how to do this. Because what becomes evident when you start looking at not only the convoluted system, the way that it's written, like the whole maritime law legal system that you mentioned earlier, the maritime legal system that that is imposed here on planet Earth, it seems to be something that is used throughout the universe by rogue beings that invade planets and just impose the same system, the same legal system of control, monetary system of control on the beings of that planet, and that's how they keep them enslaved. It's a phenomenally brilliant scheme if you think about it. But sooner or later, like what's happening to us here, people wake up and they rise in consciousness and they realize that they're being enslaved, and then things change. However, imagine you're on a different planet and the beings that have been enslaved do not have the capacity to rise in consciousness, if their DNA has been manipulated in a way that does not allow for a rise in consciousness, that then becomes a huge problem. Now you got a perpetual enslavement scenario and a perpetual enslavement situation of the cloned species. Now that is what I believe is then what Star Trek called a breach of the prime directive, where you're interfering with the beings on a planet and you're interfering with their own development.
Indeed, indeed. And we'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Tellinger from michaeltellinger.com is my guest.